Duke fans, welcome to episode 623 of the DVR, the Duke Basketball Roundup. I am Jason Evans, joined by Donald Wine. It's a little before 9 a.m. on Friday morning, Donald. We've gotten some emails lately, Donald. We've gotten some emails. People like, we need you guys to talk about what's happening.
Yeah, it's weird, Jason. It hasn't been a very busy time, you know, in the grand scheme of things. It doesn't feel like this week. Last week, we feel like we had like three or four episodes because people just kept declaring. And this week, we've gotten more emails that have kind of broached the overall general theme of the offseason, which has been the transfer portal and why Duke has been affected by it. So I'm glad we're going to get into it.
Yeah, exactly. We need to have a discussion of this, but the way to launch it is in this way. TJ Power has announced that he is the latest Dukie to enter the transfer portal. You know, his note had said all the right things, you know, that he loved his time at Duke, considers himself a member of the Brotherhood. Duke, I'm sure, considers him a member of the Brotherhood as well. There are people out there who are like, are these guys who transfer, are these guys who leave, are they still Brotherhood members? Are you kidding me?
Yes.
That absolutely.
Full stop.
This, yeah, we're not having that discussion. We will not be going there. And we wish TJ Power all the best as he moves on. Donald, I just want to, you know, hit a couple other pieces of news related to this, and then you and I can have the discussion. And by the way, I don't want to short shift TJ very much, but having a conversation about his career at Duke, the little, you know, it's not a long conversation.
Yeah, and if I may quickly, right? Because
please, yes,
we were waiting for some other news to come down because we thought that reason why I record on Fridays because we thought a couple other pieces of information would be, you know, out in the public and ready for us to discuss. But when it comes to TJ Power, again, this is a guy who came in and Jason, we talked about Jaden Shute the other day and how Jaden Shute was a guy who was kind of off the radar, and then his shooting kind of vaulted him into, you know, the top 50 and a lot of those recruiting polls. And we thought we were getting a steal, and it just didn't quite work out for him.
Right.
TJ Power is kind of a similar trajectory, right? A guy who was kind of off the grid, and then late last summer, before he committed, he kind of came out of nowhere, and his shooting kind of vaulted him into a lot of polls and a lot of these rankings that we have. And, you know, we saw some of the flashes of those rankings and why they were the way they were, the fact that he could shoot the ball. We kind of got those in flashes, but it just didn't quite seem for him that he was able to crack the rotation and really get some good minutes for him to showcase what he can do. So, you know, it sounds like he wants to go somewhere else to try and figure that out and get more playing time. And we certainly wish him the best. We enjoyed watching him play. And again, we're really huge fans of TJ Power wherever he goes, unless, of course, he's playing Duke down the road.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Let me get to some other sort of transfer portal kind of stuff before we get into a larger conversation about it. And that is, there are a couple players, one of whom is on campus right now, one of whom is coming to campus this weekend. Transfer portal guys who are going to be visiting Duke. We just want all of you out there in Duke Nation to know who these players are. The guy on campus at the moment is Malik Brown. You may recall him from playing for the Syracuse Orange the past couple of years. He played almost 30 minutes per game for them this past season, averaged just under 10 points per game, 7.2 rebounds per game. The key numbers with Malik Brown, though, are he was a shot blocker and a heck of a steals guy, 2.2 steals per game from Malik Brown. Folks may recall he had a really big game, arguably his best game of the year, against Duke. Mm-hmm. I think he put up 26 points against us. A very impressive outing by
him. That's how you put yourself on the radar, man.
Yeah, exactly. Malik Brown is a classic defensive specialist. He's someone who can step outside and hit some shots. You know, he's not going to be a dead-eye three-point shooter, but he is someone who hit close to 37% of his three-pointers. So he's someone who can step outside and shoot. But the real value Malik Brown brings to a team, and by the way, he's 6'8", 6'9", in the 220, 230 kind of range, you know, sort of a 4-5 in the classic sense. He mostly played center for Syracuse. But His value to teams is as a defensive stopper and as a rebounder. He made the All-ACC defensive team this past year. And that's a big deal. That is not an insignificant kind of thing. And if we're just being honest, Donald, there's a lot of speculation, a lot of talk that Malik Brown and Sean Stewart don't really fit on a roster together. And that as a result, you know, if you have one, you know, having the other doesn't make a ton of sense. That these are both guys who clearly from their athleticism, from their skill, from all that kind of stuff, deserve playing time. And that they're, you know, there are difficult scenarios where if they're on a roster together, maybe they don't both get playing time. And so there are plenty of people out there who say if Malik Brown decides that he wants to transfer to Duke, that Sean Stewart will leave. We haven't heard, you know, official word whether Sean Stewart is entering the transfer portal or staying at Duke. I know a lot of Duke fans really, really have great expectations for what Sean can provide to the Blue Devils. And Donald, I think it's possible that by the time folks listen to this, that we will have an answer.
We hear, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It really could come at any moment. But at the moment, the question is sort of Malik Brown or Sean Stewart. And that's sort of maybe what Duke is looking at for this year. And then I wanted to very quickly mention, then I'll let you get in, I promise. In addition to Malik Brown, Duke is also getting a visit this weekend from Brandon Angel from Stanford. Malik Brown, by the way, is only been in college basketball for a couple seasons, so he would have a couple years of eligibility left. Brandon Angel is one of these fifth-year seniors, a more experienced guy who's in his mid-20s already. As I said, he played for Stanford last year. He is more of a stretch four. He is a guy who is very capable, very good at stepping out and hitting three-pointers. As a junior, he hit 39% from three. As a senior last year, get ready for the number, he hit almost 45% of his three-point shots, averaged 13 points per game for Stanford. Not a big rebounder, not a super physical guy, only grabbed a little under 5 rebounds per game. And there are people out there who think that he is sort of a TJ Power replacement kind of guy. You know, he's not someone who's going to go inside and be physical and bang with you, but he's someone who's going to step outside. And if you leave him open, he's going to bury the jumper, which is a lot of what people thought TJ Power's kind of role might have been on Duke going forward. Brandon Angel, it's worth noting, is someone who played more than 30 minutes per game for the Stanford Cardinal last year. And it's unclear how much of a role Duke would necessarily have for him in terms of, you know, like starter and starting minutes. That's certainly not a given coming into Duke. But I just want people to know these names of guys who are actually visiting, you know, transfer portal guys who are actually visiting Duke at this moment. And then, Donald, before you get started, because I have a ton, I'm going to let you go, and then I have a ton, I do want to mention this. I have heard Duke fans in recent days, I should say in recent weeks, just screaming, crying, it's so unfair that we don't have enough of these portal guys. Duke needs to get older. The young Duke team lost to NC State that was full of nothing but guys who had transferred to that program, guys who were in their fourth, fifth year of college basketball, and Duke really only had Ryan Young playing a limited role and Jeremy Roach as our guys who were older, more experienced guys. And Duke fans were just like, we've got to get older. It's not fair. We need to use this transfer portal the way other teams do. And then I hear Duke fans today, after TJ Power has transferred, after Mark Mitchell and Jaden Shute and Jeremy Roach have transferred, I hear Duke fans saying, why can't we keep our guys around? We should develop these players. It's not fair. Oh, Sean Stewart might transfer. TJ Power has transferred. These guys are just freshmen. Why aren't they sticking around? Folks, you can't have it both ways. They're just isn't enough minutes. There just isn't enough opportunity. You can't say we need to bring in these fourth and fifth year seniors and we need to keep our freshmen so they become sophomores. It just won't happen both ways. People need to understand we're in a brave new world. College basketball is not what it used to be. And this is the new reality. And as Duke fans, it's hitting us. It's slapping us in the face. It's no fun. I know none of us wishes. We all want to have a roster with 13 scholarship, five-star athletes who are competing for time. If they don't get time, they stick around next year and the year after. That's just not going to happen.
Jason, that was a lot. Let me start by saying this. when we go back to last year, we commended the coaching staff for not losing anyone, right? We didn't lose anybody to the portal, and we gained Ryan. Or, we had Ryan Young. We brought him back. We brought back the three sophomores. We got Neil Begovich, was kind of our only guy that we really got in the transfer portal because we didn't need anybody else. And we even got Jeremy Roach back on the, you know, it seems like the eve of the end of the season where you can decide to stay in the draft or come back to college. We got him on the eve of that. So we were in mid May when we found out, hey, we brought everybody back that we wanted. And this year,
well, wait, we would have loved to have gotten Derek Lively and Tariq Whitehead too. Yeah, but I mean, well, yes.
No,
yes,
no, what I'm saying, everybody, yeah, the realistic ones, the ones that were like, you know, Kyle Filipowski, who came out of nowhere, we're like, oh, we're about to lose him. And we don't. And we get the three sophomores back. We get Ryan Young back. And everyone probably felt like this is something that we can do every year. But it's not something that's going to happen every year. And Jason, as you say, that this brave new world that we're in, it's even gotten more new in the last week because the NCAA earlier this week eliminated the rule that they had that basically allowed you to only transfer once in your undergraduate career and once as a grad transfer. Now you can transfer every single year if you want to, so long as you don't do it during the middle of the season. And I think that has opened up worlds for a lot of people. We talk about getting the fourth and fifth year seniors. That's not going to happen that much either after next year because the COVID year is going to be gone. So you're not going to have a lot of 26-year-olds rolling around on campus anymore. It's still going to be 3 and 4 year guys, but at the same time, you could have guys who could transfer and be at four schools in their 4 years of eligibility. And
you're going to see it. You're going to see that.
You're
absolutely
going to see it. Yeah, and it could start. I mean, it's as soon as a couple years from now, because you have people who are transferring now who could transfer, you know, a couple more times before they graduate. And we even heard this, you know, Jason, when Jeremy Roach decided to enter the portal and enter the draft, everyone said, well, why wouldn't he just finish at Duke? Like, well, look, ladies and gentlemen, I went to law school at Miami. I would have loved to stay at Duke for another year. But sometimes you got to go out and show that you have learning from a, you know, separate institutions that are just as great. And I'm proud of my, you know, the fact that I went to Miami and got a law degree from there. Very proud of that. If you've been to Miami, you understand. But at the same time, I would have gotten, you know, had just as much fun staying at Duke, but I would have had the same experience for undergrad and college. And now I have two separate things that I can show employers. Hey, I have, you know, a wide range of learning from different institutions, different people, different trains of thought, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, we talked about that with Jeremy Roach. We talked about, you know, change of scenery after 4 years is not a crazy thing.
It's not a crazy thing, and it doesn't mean that he's not committed to the program. In fact, it might mean he is more committed to the program than most of us, because he may say, hey, look, I've done my 4 years. I enjoyed my time, but I know the future of the program is in the hands of these two, you know, of Tyrese Proctor and Caleb Foster, and I want them to be able to see that out. We don't know what that conversation was like. But we know that Jeremy Roach decided to go in another direction, and we support him in that. But the other thing is this. We cannot feel like you said, Jason, we can't go after the top 10 players in the country every year and then also get all the best players on the portal and then also keep everybody year after year, because there's only 200 minutes to divide amongst, you know, the 13 players that are scholarship players. And then you even have like the Stanley Bortons and then Neil Begoviches and Stanley, you know, Stanley Hubbards of the world. You can't, that math doesn't math. We've talked about
Duke
math
in
the show.
Donald, Duke is special. We're not that special.
Right. We don't get extra minutes. We don't get extra games unless we win a national championship to play all these guys. And a lot of these guys, I think when we talk about this new brave world that we're in, Jason, the new brave world is NIL, right? And we've talked about how NIL has affected some of our recruiting, you know, from guys getting a, you know, $1 million or something. Is really on the football field as well. We've seen guys move for a lot of money like Riley Leonard. But I will say this, Jason, what we've been learning throughout this offseason so far is that NIL doesn't have that much to do with it. It's playing time. It's the fact that these guys look and they say, hey, look, and you, as I mentioned, this is something that we have had to deal with since the beginning of the NCAA. People used to transfer only because they said, hey, I've been here a couple years. I haven't really got any playing time. I want to move somewhere where I think I might get more playing time. That has been the reality for Duke this offseason, which is not, you know, which is kind of unique compared to the rest of college basketball, because a lot of people are switching for dollars and cents as opposed to minutes and seconds. And I think that's the idea here, is that we just don't have enough minutes to spread around. And these guys, rightfully so, and for us, we'd love for them to stay and compete and say, hey, the guys that are transferring, they can stay here and we can make the freshmen better. And the freshmen getting better makes everybody better, makes Duke a machine. But the reality is, all these guys want to play. They're all competitive. They're way more competitive, Jason, than you or I, and you and I are very competitive in life. But these guys are more competitive in basketball than any of us can ever be in what we do. That's how they got to this level. That's how they got to this position. And the root of all evil in college basketball is not money. It's the fact that these guys want the ball in their hands. They want to play. They want to be that guy who leads a team to glory, whether it be a conference title or a national title, because they know that the money and the dollars and cents can come later if you have the glory attached to it as well. Yeah, just think about how many people can come back to Duke and do whatever they want because they won a national championship for us. That sort of thing really rings true. And especially with Duke, when the NIL money is present for everybody, everyone has, a piece to get as much of it as they want. Jeremy Roach had a Raid commercial. Paolo Banchero had a JD Sports commercial, and none of you have heard JD Sports because it's not in the United States. Like, they get access to these things. But at the end of the day, if they weren't playing, they would want to find somewhere that will. And that's why we've seen so many guys transfer out of here over the last few years. I mean, even before the NIL era, right? Like, we are lucky in the fact that NIL has not cost us anybody. It has been, when they look at the depth chart, they go, wow, there's 87 people ahead of me. I'm never going to see the court. Let me transfer somewhere that will. So that's the main route. So I want people to understand that when they have these arguments about why things are happening or what we should be doing better, the only thing right now that we need to be doing better is figuring out at Duke in the science departments how to create more time on the basketball court for everyone in the game, because that's the only way we're going to get all these guys to play.
Yeah, and of course we're not able to bend the rules of time and space
Not
physics.
yet, but I know Duke is working on it. There's
Yeah.
smart people at Duke. Someone's going to come up with a time turner like in Harry Potter. But until then, we have to roll with the clock that we have.
Yeah, and there are a few things out. Boy, I've got like literally two plus pages of notes.
We could talk about this for years. It is,
Yeah,
this is this is not a this is not
this
an
might be a
easy
long pod.
conversation. Yeah, it's not an easy conversation, and it's also, as we've mentioned already, there's so many angles to this.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to start on a few of the different angles. First one is this. Folks, here's the definitive list. I looked, I did some research, I've asked some people. Here's the definitive list of folks who transferred, left Duke, and we went, oh man, we really missed out on something there. Here's the list. You ready? These are guys who it looks like they would have been significant players had they stayed at Duke. Again, here's the entire list. Elliot Williams. Remember Elliot Williams? Coach K didn't play him
Email.
early in the year, played him late. But then Elliot Williams decided to leave for Memphis. So I think there's little question that Elliot Williams would have been a significant player for the Duke Blue Devils had he stuck around.
And his mom was sick, so that played into that
Yes,
decision as
played a
well.
role. No question about it, played a role. But, in terms of like his playing time at Duke, completely different from like a TJ Power or a Henry Coleman or a Jamin Brakefield, to name guys who transferred in recent years. Very, very different than guys like that. And also Sean Stewart. So Elliot Williams, first name on the list. Next name on the list is Michael Binajay, who struggled very much at Duke and really didn't become a really good player at Syracuse until his junior year, which was 2 years after he left Duke. And really wasn't like a really great player at Syracuse until his senior year when he was one of the leading scorers in the ACC. But Michael Binajay, I think, had he stuck around at Duke, eventually would have gotten there, perhaps. Semi Ojeleye, of course, who went to SMU and then played several seasons in the NBA. Semi Ojeleye, by the way, is really the only one of these guys who transferred from Duke who ended up making, millions in the NBA. But it's worth noting with Semi, he said,
Binajay did as well. Binajay played a few years for the Pistons. I wouldn't say.
not a few years. No. He got a cup of coffee. Binajay did not make millions of dollars in the NBA.
Well, he made millions because you start out with a million. So he was in the season. He was in a
Well,
couple seasons. So yeah.
okay. Well, yeah, we can look it up. I think Binajay played a little tiny bit. I don't think it, regardless. But the thing I was going to say about Shemi was he admitted he didn't have the work ethic at Duke, that he had to learn from, not playing at all at Duke for a year and a half. That's what taught him what it took to play really well, which he did at SMU, and then earn his way into the NBA.
And I believe he played at SMU when Larry Brown was the coach.
He
So
was,
again,
yes.
he got that NBA, like, I mean, Larry Brown is not a guy who you can slack off in practice. I know that from his time with the Pistons. He's a man that demands respect and demands, work ethic. So again, he probably learned a lot from Duke, but he learned just as much at SMU, which I think is great, right, for his career. And that's why he's been able to stick it out in the NBA the way he has.
Yeah, and then the last name on my list is Billy McCaffrey, a guy born well before a lot of people listen to this podcast. I'm sorry, a guy who played at Duke probably before a lot of people listening to this podcast were even born. Was a big star of the 91 national championship team, chose not to come back for 92, went to Vanderbilt, was I want to say he was SEC player of the year, had a huge year at Vanderbilt. He transferred not because he was dissatisfied with playing time or anything like that. He transferred because he needed to play point guard. He needed to show he could be a point guard to make it in the NBA. He was not going to supplant Bobby Hurley at point guard at Duke. And then it turned out when he went to Vanderbilt, he actually didn't even really play point guard for Vanderbilt. He was still a shooting guard there, and he never really made it to the NBA. So again, that is my list of the impact. Maybe people might add Derek Thornton to the list, who played at Duke and then went, eventually to USC and stuff like that. But I think that is the list of guys who left Duke, and you go, that guy would have been an impact player at Duke, potentially a starter at Duke down the line, and is not a long list. So I don't say this to say I know what's going to happen with TJ Power, or I know what's going to happen if Sean Stewart decides to transfer. I don't know, and it may be that one of those guys turns into the guy who, like a Shemi or like a Michael Binajai or like an Elliot Williams, we just go, God, what a pity we missed on that. But I'm telling you, the odds are kind of long. If he can't make it here, it may be tough to make it elsewhere.
And that list that you have, does it include like the asterisk, I'll call him, Rashid Suleiman, who was kicked off the team and
Yes.
ended up transferring to Maryland? But of course, he would have been a focal point of the offense had he remained at Duke. But of course, that was a different situation than the other ones that you mentioned.
Yes, completely different. And by the way, I didn't mention Henry Coleman or Jamin Brakefield, who both are very recent transfers, guys who, we talked about on the last podcast, we were talking about Jeremy Roach and his freshman class that evaporated very, very quickly. They were both part of that freshman class. Both those guys ended up being starters on SEC teams. But if you look at sort of the success of their teams, their roles and things like that, and you look at the personnel Duke's had the past couple of years, it's really hard for me to look at what Henry Coleman has done at Texas A&M, what Jamin Brakefield's done at Ole Miss, and say, oh, if that guy was on Duke, he'd be playing big minutes. Again, I'm not seeing a lot of guys who leave the program who you go, wow, that guy would have been a huge deal in the program. Donald, if I can, I want to move on to sort of my next point about all this transfer portal stuff, which is this. John Shire, and I kind of hate that I'm even going to say this. John Shire is employed by Duke University, and I think, while I'm not going to get into the details of, oh, he's supposed to, not embarrass the program and not break rules and all that, his primary job is to win basketball games. John Shire's primary job at Duke is to put the best team he can on the floor. And the honest to God truth is that probably means that some younger guys who could be developed over the course of several years, if you have to sacrifice them to bring in some older guys who are already established college basketball players, that is what John Shire is supposed to do. It may hurt. It may not feel super loyal, although it's worth noting with 40% of all the players in college basketball currently in the transfer portal, I think loyalty sort of needs to cut both ways, and loyalty
Right.
just ain't really a big part of college basketball in the present day and age. But I'm going to use the Sean. I mean, again, we don't know what Sean Stewart's going to do. And I love Sean Stewart and I want Sean Stewart to stay at Duke. But if you're John Shire, is there a chance that Sean Stewart, if he comes back, is a little bit scatterbrained next year the way he was this year? Can't quite figure out exactly where to be on the floor at all times? Is there a chance he's not completely up to the task of playing 30 minutes per game against ACC competition? Yeah, sadly, unfortunately, there is. I don't think that's going to happen. But if Sean Stewart comes back, there's a chance that happens. Well, what about Malik Brown, who's the guy who, you know, a lot of people say Malik Brown or Sean Stewart? Is there a chance that Malik Brown is overmatched, that he gets a little bit lost in games, that he's not able to compete against ACC opponents playing 30 minutes per game? No, there's no chance of that. He played 30 minutes per game at Syracuse this past year and made the All-ACC defensive team. If you're John Shire, Sean Stewart versus Malik Brown, and you have Cooper Flagg, a generational talent that you want to surround with the best possible team you can. If you're John Shire, I think maybe you have to pick Malik Brown. Again, I hate that I'm saying this. And it's the same thing about like Brandon Angel or some other sort of, you know, wing three-point shooting specialist kind of player from the portal versus TJ Power. Do we know that TJ Power is going to be a guy that you can play 15, 20 minutes and just rain down 40%+ of his threes next year at Duke? No, we don't know that for a fact. If Brandon Angel came in, if Mason Gillis from Purdue came in, who's another name connected to Duke potentially, if one of these guys came in to play that same position that TJ Power was sort of being looked at, do you know that they'd probably be able to play 15 plus minutes and be a 3-and-D threat and hit 40%+ of their threes? Well, yeah, we do know that because they've done it already. It sucks. I want Duke to develop these players. I want these players to stay at Duke for a long time. But if your job as John Shire is to field the best damn team you can, especially with a generational talent like Cooper Flagg next year, then Brandon Angel, Mason Gillis, Malik Brown make more sense than the guys who are currently in the program. I hate that I'm saying it, Donald, but I have to say it.
Well, I agree with you in part, disagree in some part. I think the part that I agree on is if we're looking at the portal, these are the guys you need to look at, right? A guy who is a first team All-ACC defensive player. Yeah, we want defense. We're going to be riding defense quite a bit next year. Hey, there's a guy that shoots 45% from three. Yeah, let's go ahead and get him too. Like that, those are the guys you need to be looking at. You want to have things that you know might be missing from next year's offense and defense. And I think when we look at Duke, I think the reason why people are a little upset is because we as a school are not really used to transfers. I mean, if you think about it, before the transfer portal really got into full effect, we were getting one every 4 or 5 years, maybe, right? And they were memorable, right? Rashad McCloud, Dante Jones, Seth Curry, Rodney Hood, right? We got guys that people were like, those guys were absolute surefire additions to our team. We cannot imagine those teams that they were on going on without those guys. They were such, and even like in the case of Dante Jones and Seth Curry, they had to sit out a year. Everyone had to sit out a year. They sat out during years where we won a national championship. And those teams say, hey, look, the reason why we won that title is because this guy was in practice doing his best because he knew he couldn't play. So the games that we were playing, he couldn't play in, his games were practice. So he was playing his best in practice, and that was making us as a team better. I think you need some of that. Even with the transfer portal being open, Jason, like we have the, you know, Theo John, we have, you know, Ryan Young, who've come in, Jacob Grandison, right, who came in.
Yep.
We haven't really utilized the portal. Yeah. As Kale Catchings, but we haven't really utilized the portal as much as others, right? Again, we played teams throughout the tournament who had four or five, six guys that were coming from the transfer portal and don't know the school, don't know the history. They're just there to play. I think you can't have it both ways, as you mentioned, but I do think that this part of college basketball in terms of Duke is going to change because we are going to utilize the portal more. You need to utilize the portal now because you're going to have guys who want playing time and it's kind of like a 1 year audition somewhere else where they can, you know, just like a job, right? Jason, if you left CNN's going to be like, oh, I found this other guy who might work for, you know, CBS or Fox or something that does something similar to what Jason can provide and can add something to that, right? They're going to do that. They're not going to necessarily go out into college and recruit the new rookie. They may go out and get somebody just as experienced as you, of which there's very few. because they want to make sure that you have that. Same for me, right? Like there's going to be times where if you leave a job, they're not going to replace you with somebody that does it, that they don't know can get it done. They want to replace you with someone that they know that the learning curve is short. And so I think in college basketball, that is a new reality for us as Duke fans, because we are going to have to understand that A, the best players want to play. And if the best players are not playing, they now have an avenue where they can transfer and go somewhere else. Just like we've seen every year we have the coaching carousel, we are going to have the transfer portal carousel every year. That number might be reduced now, given the fact that, again, we have one more year of the COVID year for people, and then that rolls off. But you may have more players because, again, you can transfer every one of your 4 years if you want to. And I think for some of these guys, they also look at the success that we've had with transfers, and they go, hey, if I transfer, I want to be that success for somewhere else, because where they go, they bring the pedigree of having a season or two seasons or four seasons at Duke University. And I know teams, that is something that teams absolutely want, because we're arguably the best program on this planet. So that you have to approach it from the sense of these players want to play. NIL is going to be there. And yes, some guys are transferring due to NIL, or that might play a huge factor into where they go. But for Duke players who come in, they're all McDonald's All-Americans, they're all in the top 15, 20, 50 of their class, all they want to do is play and lead Duke to national championship. And if they're not going to play, they are the ones that are saying, hey, I need to go somewhere else, because at the top of my list, it does not matter what NIL dollars I get. If I'm sitting on the bench to watch it happen, I want to be on the floor where I can showcase my skills and hopefully go to the next level.
Hey, dude, it's not even like playing time is the end all be all answer. There are guys, Bronny James averaged almost 20 minutes per game last year. Top 25 recruit. He's in the transfer portal. Andre Stojakovic averaged 22 minutes per game last year. I'm talking about guys, top 25 recruits who are coming off their freshman season. Aiden Holloway,
right,
top 20 recruit, averaged 20 minutes per game last year. These guys are all, I'm naming guys who are in the portal. They played 20 plus minutes per game. There's a huge list of them. Top 50 recruits who played 20 plus minutes per game who are currently in the transfer portal after their freshman year.
And a lot of those are due to coaching cycle, the coaching carousel,
yeah,
as well.
Sure. Yes. Some of it. Absolutely.
Like, that's the reason why Bronny's in the portal. That's the reason why Stojakovic is in the portal, is because their coaches left. And now they're like, okay, well, and it's the same reason why Arkansas has one player on their roster right now. And it's some walk-on, because everybody else either decommitted, got let out of the letter of intent, or they transferred or into the portal because Musselman left. Calipari came in and he had this famous quote of, I talked to the team. There is no team, because he has nobody to talk to.
Yeah. But the bottom line is, there are guys all across college basketball who are top tier recruits, who even got playing time, who are like, no, I'm going to go check it out and see what else is out there. I'm going to go enter the portal. Sometimes it's an NIL thing. Sometimes it's just a, you know, I didn't necessarily love it here as much as I did, as I thought I would, whatever it may be. We are in an era of maximum player movement. And I want to add one more thing. This is not a 1 year thing. I know Duke fans are experiencing it in a really ugly way for the first time this year. It is not going to be a 1 year thing. Duke has Con Knuppel, Darren Harris, and Isaiah Evans coming in next year, who all look like, you know, if not similar players, similar kind of positions, somewhat similar skill sets. All three of them supposed to be able to shoot really well from outside. You know, some ball handling. These are all wings. All three of these guys. I'm telling you right now, Donald, like, if you're someone out there who likes to play the minutes game, oh, let's guess how many minutes this guy's going to play and that guy's going to play. Do not pencil all three of K2, Evans, and Harris in for 6 minutes each or something like that. It doesn't work out that way. John Shire, like most coaches, likes to play 7.5, maybe 8 guys. I'm telling you, one of those guys will probably end up playing 15, 16 minutes. It won't be two of them playing 8 minutes or three of them playing 6 minutes each. One of them is going to be just a little bit, just enough better that he's going to be the guy who gets those 15, 16, 18, maybe 20 minutes per game. And the other guys sit there and contemplate, do I want to keep on competing? Do I want to keep on fighting for a spot at Duke next year? Do I see a clear path for me to have a major role next year? Or do I do what Jaden Shute did, what TJ Power did, what so many guys are now doing, and do I move on? And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with any of that. This is just the reality of what college basketball is, but I want Duke fans to be prepared for it next season. We had it this year. Caleb Foster and Jared McCain earned big minutes. Jared McCain earned enough minutes and played well enough that he's moving on the NBA. Caleb Foster didn't quite have that option, but is coming back to Duke. But there are plenty of other freshmen that probably aren't or are definitely are not coming back. And we have a six-man class coming in next year. And I think you're going to see something at least a little bit similar happen next year as well.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you may, again, I don't think this is how Duke is going to operate, but don't be surprised that like guys come in, you have a huge class, and then you kind of go, all right, well, you know, three of these guys played, the other three are going to transfer. We bring in three guys from the portal. We bring in another big class, and you kind of see rotation. I'm not saying that this is something that Duke is going to do, but you will see this across college basketball where, you know, Calipari did this before the portal, right? He would bring in five guys, and then he would announce at senior day that all five guys are entering the draft even before the guys were like, hey, I haven't even talked to my parents about this. And he would just say, yeah, the new, next wave's coming in next. And you're going to see some coaches be kind of cutthroat about that. Again, I repeat. I do not think this is something that Duke is going to do. However, this is the, again, part of this new reality is that some of these players behind closed doors may go, coach, I'm not happy here for whatever reason, and they may want to move on. So it's the other thing I think where a lot of people are kind of upset, Jason, is that this next year that's coming up has the highest of expectations with Cooper Flagg coming in with it, right?
Yeah.
We're not here for, you know, ACC titles and regular season titles and whatever multi-team event that we wanted that we end up at. We're here for a national championship. We're here for Final Four. People want that with this particular team. And they want everybody who was part of this past team to come back and show these freshmen, this is what we need to do to get to this level. Now it's on to you guys to help us get beyond that and get to that promised land that we've been searching for. And some of this, and a few, I know some fans are like, oh, some of these guys just don't want to compete. Yeah, they do. But there's a difference between competing in an open competition and showing up for a race on Monday that was won on Sunday. That is, the latter is happening in the case of some of these guys where they realize, hey, I can compete all I want. I'm not getting playing time because there's 18 guys ahead of me and I'm just not going to get that playing time. So do I stay and fight for the scraps of what's left and maybe some garbage time? Or do I go somewhere where someone may say, hey, you can help us out by playing 20, 25 minutes a game? That's the decision a lot of these guys are having to make. And it's a difficult one. And I think the final thing that I'll say about this is that whatever decision everybody makes, people should respect it. It's not your decision. It's not my decision. Yes. It's not Jason's decision. It's their decision. And we support them on the field. We support them in the classroom. And we support them after they have left the walls of the Gothic Wonderland. Even if this is to go elsewhere, the only time, again, that we'll say that we won't cheer against them is if they happen to be playing us. But we support these guys and their decision because it's a difficult decision to be made. Coaches are leaving all the time, and players now have that opportunity to do so. And if some take advantage of it because they need, for whatever reason that is close to their heart, then trust that their decision is best. And as a, you know, look, as a 19-year-old, I didn't make all the right decisions, but I made some good ones, right? One of the good ones I had was sticking with Duke, right? That I didn't transfer somewhere else. I went to Duke. I graduated. That was my decision. But if I had decided to go somewhere else, there was not going to be people on the internet that was going to be yelling at me about that. Remember that when you think about how these guys are contemplating their futures and where they may end up.
Yeah. And my final word on this, you talked about competing, and there are a lot of, I've heard people out there who say, you know what? The attitude needs to be, oh, someone else is going to come in here and try and take my time. I dare him. Bring it on. I'll play your butt to the bench, you know? And boy, I would love it if it was as simple as that. But the reality is that these are super important, life-changing decisions about whether or not you get playing time. It seems crazy to those of us who are looking at a game and enjoying it as a game. But if you're someone who has aspirations on playing professional basketball, the prospect of sitting for an entire season, the prospect of sitting for a second entire season and not getting meaningful playing time is so detrimental to your development, to your ability to become the basketball player that you think you can be, that it is just a huge, huge risk. I mean, yeah, I wish every one of these guys was like, bring it on. You want to, Coach Shire, you want to bring in a transfer? I'm going to show you that you made a mistake, that I'm better than that transfer. God, I mean, it'd be great if that happened. But that is a terribly, terribly risky thing for a kid and for his family to do when there is a safer path to playing time, to development, and to becoming a professional basketball player. It's tough, man. It's really tough to say you got to fight, because sometimes the fight may not be winnable.
And it's a gamble to enter the portal in the first place. This is not like when you when a student transfers, right? When a student transfers, they apply to whatever school they want to transfer to, they get in, and then they tell their school, hey, I'm leaving, I'm going to this other school. It doesn't work that way in the portal. These guys, when they leave, their scholarship is up for grabs, and they may find out that, hey, the schools that kind of wanted me, that I thought were going to get me, don't have room for me. And now the school that I just came from gave my scholarship away because I told them that I'm not coming back. And now I'm without a team. You think about the portal. There was what it was like 40,000 players that are in the portal right now. And there's not 40,000 scholarships to go around. So that's the gamble that some of these guys are taking. Some of them may have their decisions made, but that's why you kind of see, I mean, even last year, right? We had guys who transferred. We were going to accept some transfers. And then Duke said, no, these guys academically aren't, we can't take them. And they had to go somewhere else. Some guys ended up, like Armando Bacot has gone into the portal like 87 times, and he's gone back to UNC every single time. So you have that as well. So I think people, you know, yes, some of these guys are into the portal and they may not come back, but the gamble that they are taking is that they don't know where their future lies. And I think that is the difference between a student athlete and a student.
Yeah. All right. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. On the other side, we're going to put all the portal, all the transfer stuff behind us for a moment. You know, Donald, but it's kind of funny, you know, to think about it. I mean, here we are on April 19th. My bet is on, you know, in like 2 or 3 weeks or so, we'll know the Duke roster. This will all be just a distant memory. But I know it feels like it's the dominant thing for now. But we're going to put all of it aside for a moment because we want to look ahead to next season. There's been an announcement about some games that Duke can be playing next year. Wow, wow, wow. The schedule is shaping up to be something truly special. We're going to talk about that after the break. Donald, we're back from the break, and very quickly. We don't have a lot of time, but we want to get into some games that were announced. I don't know if it was officially, like it wasn't like press release kind of announced. It's sort of, you know, stuff that's leaked in the media.
Reports. We'll call them reports.
Yeah, call them reports, exactly. But the first report is this. It appears that Duke is going to play another game in Vegas. Remember a couple of years ago, we played Gonzaga in Vegas. Very big deal game. Huge national ratings. Lots of national attention as two of the top teams in the land. Paolo Banchero versus Chet Holmgren. Well, Duke's going to play Kansas in Vegas this time. Apparently just within days of after we play Arizona at Arizona, that sort of Duke's going to have one sort of Western road trip that will go to Arizona. And then a few days later, we will play Kansas in Vegas. Going to be a huge, huge matchup, a big, big deal. This is part of, Donald, you and I gotten a little wind of this, that Duke and Kansas are working on something. The years that we don't play each other in the Champions Classic, we're going to try and see if there's a way we can play. We'd heard maybe some home and home. Looks like not home and home now. Looks like a game in Vegas. But, man, that's really exciting. And then the other one that came out is that Duke is apparently going to play Maine at the start of the season, perhaps the initial game, the kickoff game to the season. Of course, the reason to do that is that Cooper Flagg is, I guess we can say, is already the greatest player to come out of the state of Maine in its history. I guess currently the greatest Maine basketball player is Duncan Robinson. Played at Michigan and is now on the Miami Heat and is a significant player in the NBA. I think all the expectations are that Cooper Flagg will surpass Duncan Robinson's career. Dunk has done a great job, but Cooper Flagg is something really special. And so Duke is going to play Maine in Cameron, give like Cooper probably knows several of the guys on that main team. And then the other thing is I've heard some rumblings, Arkansas. There's some rumblings that Duke either is going to get Arkansas in Cameron in the ACC-SEC challenge, or there's even some talk that Duke and Arkansas may just schedule a little home-and-home thing outside of the ACC-SEC challenge. Give me your thoughts on all these scheduling things that are coming up. It really looks like Duke is setting up itself to have one of the top non-conference schedules in all of college basketball next year.
Yeah, well, first off, the Kansas game. About a month and a half ago, I had learned that they were working on a home-and-home where we would go to Fog Allen and they would come to Cameron. And then it would also be a part of, you know, when we're not playing the Champions Classic, which next season we're playing Kentucky, but the year after that, we are supposed to be playing Kansas. So now if this comes to fruition, we're playing Kansas 2 years in a row, and then that could be maybe the start of something else. Because I think after that rotation, I know they've been talking about the future of the Champions Classic and what it could bring, especially now that Cal's gone and you know, Michigan State usually is in the top 10 and they haven't been as good in years past, how that worked, how that shapes out, and either they retool or find something else. But I think, of course, I was at that game against Gonzaga in Vegas. Just absolutely incredible. It was awesome to be there. So for them to add this to,
if we play Kansas Arizona, in Vegas, I think I'm gonna go out. I think I'm gonna go.
Yeah, it's I think it's probably like that week of Thanksgiving. So like, I'm all in. Also, they were saying that it might be part of a multi-team event, and I don't know if that means we would stay in Vegas or if we would have kind of a barnstorming multi-team event where we play different teams at different places. They haven't figured that part out yet, but the idea is to attach it to this Arizona trip so that they can make it a West Coast trip. I'm really excited about that.
And my bet is that they do the MTE sort of like they did last year, where it'll be a couple lesser teams that'll probably play Kansas in Fog Allen. They'll play Duke in Cameron, and then Duke and Kansas will play in Vegas. And those other lesser teams, you know, maybe they play, you know, like right before the Duke Kansas game in Vegas or something like that. But
I'm not so sure about that. The reason why is because one, we have John Shire on record saying that they weren't planning on doing that again. I know things change, but at least we have that on record for now. The other thing was, I know it's been hard to kind of decipher some of this because some of the reporting is kind of shaky on it, but there have been rumblings about a huge NIL multi-team event being created, which Duke is one of the teams that's in being considered for that, and Kansas was as well. So that would line up with playing Kansas and Vegas, and then maybe playing a couple of other neutral site games elsewhere in the country, maybe even the Garden, right? Because we haven't learned. We usually play a game in the New York City area, and we haven't learned about that yet. Maybe that's a part of it as well. But man, these games that are coming up, like there's going to be no excuses. Like if we can win a lot of these games, then we're going for number one seeds, right? We're going to be a battle-tested team before we even enter the ACC season, of which is very difficult as well to win that, as we know. Having an Arkansas, whether it be neutral site, I think it's going to be part of the SEC challenge. I would be very surprised if we gain someone else. And the only reason I think we would not get Arkansas in the SEC challenge is that, as you mentioned, we just schedule them separately. I don't think we'll schedule them separately. I think the SEC probably already has that with Cal going there. That makes all the sense of the world for ratings. And then I also freeze up like Kentucky and UNC to play other teams, and you ESPN wins, right? ESPN wins, the conferences win. And I think with that, with Arizona on the road, I like this. You know, we may lose a couple of these games, but like, look, I want us to test ourselves against some of these teams. There's been a lot of people who want us to play UConn in that game that we play in the Garden. That would be spectacular. And I know that would be a very, very well-focused game for Duke fans. So I'm really liking the schedule and even the Maine game, right? To start out against Maine, you know, last year we talked about how some of these teams were not up to snuff and they were not – they're in the bottom 100 of KenPom. Maine, I think, is in the 200s or like in the middle of the 200s.
Yeah, I was going to say, Maine's not exactly a big-time opponent, Donald.
but you can't just play all the big hitters, right? You just can't, because they look at records too, and it doesn't matter if you play, you know, 15 teams in the top 50 and you lose seven of them. They're going to say, well, Duke is 8-7, right? They you still need to win these games, and you still need to prepare for some of these big games by playing some of these lesser opponents. I think our hope is that Maine is the worst team that we play next season other than maybe Louisville, right? Like, they're the only team that's in
Dude,
200.
Louisville's gonna be a lot better. Louisville's gonna be a lot better.
We hope so, right? We hope so. That
They
there's nowhere
are.
to go but up for them. But I think at the end of the day, we hope that Maine in like what 220 or something like that is the worst.
230. They were 231. Yeah.
If they're the worst team that we play next year, that's a battle tested team. If we're playing, you know, our quote unquote lesser opponents are in the hundreds, and we play some of these teams that are in the top 50, top 20, top 10, top three. We're going to be a really good team, and we're going to be ready for the NCAA tournament to take on everyone. All the talk about us being soft and physical and stuff. Well, Jason, we're going to be playing some teams that play very physical, and they're very good at doing so. We're going to get a lot of that here. So I'm really excited about how the schedule appears to be shaping up.
So not that it matters that much, but just super quick, I'm going to push back on one thing, which is this. It doesn't really matter to me if you play a team in the top 100 or so, really top 80-ish, that's good. That helps your resume. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, like, I don't care if they're 150 versus 250 versus 350, frankly. I mean, I know it sort of impacts your strength of schedule. It does impact. Look, if you play mostly top 150 as opposed to playing teams in the 200s and 300s, your schedule's going to be way better. But mm-hmm. in terms of what it appears the selection committee looks at, in terms of what the bracketologists tell us matters, you know.
Blowout wins.
Well, blowout wins help, but also, like, you know, so what? You know, beating a quad three versus a quad four team doesn't really matter. Frankly, right. almost even beating a, I guess, quad twos, but quad three or quad four, like, it's irrelevant. So if Maine is not the worst team Duke plays next year, if Duke schedules some games against some teams that are in the 300s or the low 200s, these are all quad four teams. These are all teams that Duke's going to beat. And like we say, maybe Duke puts a big, big number on some of them, and that helps you in the analytics and helps boost you a bit. You know, there are people out there who think that the Big 12 has gamed the system. The Big 12 teams are playing terrible opponents, beating the snot out of them, and really boosting the entire conference's ranking in that way. So maybe there's something to be said for that. But, you know, again, my pushback is, I don't think John Shire needs to be looking and going, oh, is this team a top 150 team? They're in the top 100. If they're not in the top 100, I don't care. I don't think it matters that much. And frankly, if you're Duke and you're competing for a one seed, you should probably beat them anyway.
I agree with that last part, right? I don't think John Shire is looking at KenPom, right, in scheduling filling out his schedule for next year. But I do think that, you know, again, one of the gripes that we had, or one of the gripes a lot of fans had, is when we played, like, you know, the Queens Colleges of the world, people are like, we have nothing to gain from this, right? We're like, if we win by 50, no one really cares. And if we, like, win by 10, people were emailing us about how bad we played, right? Like, so you want, if you're doing that against a 100 level team or maybe 150 or something like that, then we get less of those, less of that chatter, right? So I think, you know, when we're looking at it, I'm sure they're going to try and schedule what they think is a tough schedule, with some teams that they could potentially see in the NCAA tournament, which is exactly how we schedule. And so we may have some teams that are going to be on the main levels of the world, but hey, we're excited about the Arizonas and the Kentuckys and potentially a Kansas or an Arkansas.
Yeah. Again, that non-conference schedule, we know for sure that it's going to be Kentucky in the Champions Classic. We know for sure it's going to be Arizona at Arizona. We are hearing Kansas in Vegas. We are hearing Arkansas in Cameron, and we still don't know. They're going to play, I'm sure they're going to play someone up in Madison Square Garden or the Barclays mm-hmm. Center, you know, someplace up in that New York, New Jersey area, because we seems like we do that every year. And that's almost always a Power Five opponent, a pretty good Power Five opponent. Seems like it's been a Big 12 team a lot lately. Like, we played Texas Tech a few
Texas
years ago.
Tech.
Yeah.
Yep.
Been a lot of big, but regardless, I mean, I just ticked off a list of like five teams that are all probably going to be in the top 10 next year. This Duke team, they're ready to take on all comers. And it's just really going to be exciting. With that, we're going to wrap it up here on the latest edition.
No, we are not. We got one more thing. I got a surprise.
You had something else you wanted to show me. Yeah, go ahead, man.
Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, we will post pictures of this. Last night I went to Little Shop of Horrors at Ford's Theater, and Mike Hemrick, who is a great friend of the podcast. For those people out there who don't know who Mike Hemrick is, he started the Duke Basketball Report via newsletter. back in the early 90s, and then helped Julian and a bunch of guys turn it into the website
Mike
form
Henrich
that
was
we have today.
He is Boswell.
Yes. Yeah. He is the man, simply put. Triple Dookie, a wonderful, wonderful human being. And through him, we set up a Duke DC event at Little Shop of Horrors. Little Shop of Horrors, great. Highly recommend. Ford's Theater, highly recommend. Had a great time. But Mike Henrich, who has been very generous to us, Jason, in the past, he said, "Hey, Donald, I have a gift for you. And I think that you and Sam are going to love this gift." Because, Jason, for the first time, we have a Stats
oh my
Game
God.
trophy. We have,
we have a
Stats
trophy.
Game
Oh my
trophy,
God,
ladies
it's a
and gentlemen.
trophy.
It is a trophy. This thing, I'm telling you, we're going to have pictures on it. He put a microphone at the top, which is terrific. We have the Stats Game Roundup, Duke Basketball Roundup Stats Game champion. And of course, because I won, he put my name on it. He even said that he wanted to go back and listen through all the episodes of the Stats Game to see who would won all of them and put them all on here. He was like, "I'm not doing all that." So our job, Jason, is we have to make sure that this gets updated with all the ones that we have, and we can move mine all the way down to the bottom.
Wow.
But, ladies and gentlemen, we have a Stats Game trophy. It's massive. It's very big. And right now, Jason, we can pass it around. But right now it's my new roommate because I won the Stats Game. And for the next year, at least, this bad boy will be somewhere in my apartment. So I wanted to share that with you. And again, ladies and gentlemen, we'll post this on social media, the picture of the trophy. But Mike Henrich, an absolute mensch. Thank you so much for your support of the show and for providing us finally with the trophy to end all trophies, the Stats Game trophy.
That is amazing. That is a great looking trophy, Mike. Mike is just the best. He
the
is
best.
So he's so great. And this is a real, real gift to us. This is going to be very, very fun. Thank you, Mike. Thank you to all of you listeners out there who have supported us in various ways, sending us emails. Boy, the email box has been really, it's been popping the past few days. Some people saying, "Please explain what's happening in the portal." You know, I wish we had easy answers. No easy answers from us, but please continue sending us those emails. dbrpodcast@gmail.com. We love reading them, even in the off season, especially in the off season when we have a little more time and we can dive into them, and we answer as many as we can here on the show. Hey, listen, don't forget, like and subscribe. Find our link tree and follow all those links on the link tree. We appreciate the support you give us. Hey, I am Jason Evans. He is Donald Wine. We're just, you know, it's a crazy time of year for Duke fans, but we're loving the community. We're loving everything we're getting from all of you folks as we deal with a difficult, uncertain time at Duke, but it leads to great things down the road. Super excited for next season. Regardless of who the roster is, I think I have a decent idea of who the roster might be, but, you know, we don't know. Anyway, that's it for the latest edition of the DBR podcast. Our thanks again to Mike Henrich, the mensch, for providing us with the trophy. Until next time, here's the Duke band to play us out. Take us home.